This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, episode 278, as we are now in the NFL season. Week one is complete, and the Arizona Cardinals are 1-0. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering, of course, the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. He runs the SB Nation site that, of course, covers the Arizona Cardinals. And Seth, we have our first week of actual NFL games. It happened. The season has begun. And it was honestly, it was kind of a weird weekend because, well, aside from the Cardinals, teams that you didn't expect to be any good at all, Redskins, Jaguars, they win. The Panthers almost win. And you get a lot. Week one was just weird to me.
Yeah, and I mean, you and I already are forgetting it's the Washington football team now.
Oh, frickin'.
WFT. And yeah, I mean, it's just such a weird time, and we'll see how it kind of wraps through this, you know, throughout the season. It's weird because in the game, I think the NFL production wise does a great job of, you're not like, oh, there's no fans there. Like, it just, I mean, when you're watching it on TV, it just seems mostly normal. But, you know, overall, I think there was definitely some, I think you're seeing the lack of home field advantage, so to speak, this year. I think you're going to see bad teams, or what we expected to be bad teams, be able to compete early in the season because everybody's kind of on a levelish playing field. Obviously, talent's going to win out in the end, but teams that are close, or maybe that are bringing in new quarterbacks or new coaches or those type of things, they're probably going to have growing pains. And then teams, you know, that have important changes, like what the 49ers had, that, you know, both on the offensive line and the defensive line, I think it kind of showed. Obviously, them not having any wide receivers helped the Cardinals, but you only play who's in front of you. And let's be honest, even in Bruce Arians' era, that was a loss a lot of the times when you went in going, oh, they're without their top two wide receivers. Well, no big deal. You know, that's an easy win. And then you lose to the Patriots on Sunday Night Football to open up what is supposed to be a special season. So, you know,
and you lose to Landry Jones in 2015.
Yeah. So it's just one of those situations. I think obviously the NFL as a whole, it did enough, but it also was one of those situations where there were points where you're like, this is weird, this is different. But like I said, from a TV viewership point of view, I thought it was as good as it could have been.
Yeah, and I've noticed that across the board, across the major sports, baseball, basketball, and now the NFL, and now football, is the fact that the viewing experience doesn't seem to be affected because while you notice that there's no fans in the stadium, your mind isn't picking it up because of the crowd noise that they have on the tracks. And now it's not authentic or anything like that, but it gives your brain just enough of a distraction to make you to keep it from being out of the keep it from being weird. And I'm gonna be interested in seeing, because I'll be at the stadium this weekend. The media will be able to go to the stadium. I'll be at the stadium this weekend for the game, and I'll see just how weird it feels, at least on the inside part. Because while they have crowd noise, it's not the same for the players. They don't come out with the same juice. But that's coming up this week. In this edition of the show, episode 278, we've got a lot to talk about because the Cardinals did win their season opener on the road against the San Francisco 49ers, 24-20. And so Seth and I are going to do in this episode, we're going to break down the good things. We're going to talk about the concerns. What surprises were there in the game? And with the win, I mean, if we're talking overreactions or the buzz the Cardinals have around the league, suddenly they have the attention of people all over, and they are potential playoff contenders. Should we see a change in our expectations? And then to wrap things up, we will talk about their matchup with this weekend against the Washington football team. The football team. The Cardinals play the football team. It's going to be so weird to see that referred to them. But anyway, let's go ahead and get started, Seth, as we talk about the win. The Cardinals get the 24-20 win. And I'll be honest, there's just a long list of things that I personally found as good things. We already knew that the Cardinals were one of the toughest opponents last season for the 49ers, but it felt like they could have won. It always felt like I always felt going into this weekend that a win was a possibility. I just never believed that it would actually happen. And there were a lot to like about what we saw from the Cardinals on Sunday, wasn't there?
Yeah, and that was the big thing is I think what we wanted to see improved was improved. And then the things that we're expecting to be good or great was good enough in game one. And that's kind of, I think to me, the key to this whole season is understanding that teams like Baltimore and Kansas City, Green Bay, New Orleans, they're going to be further along than the Arizona Cardinals. Just from a standpoint where you're talking about, you know, years in system, years in the whole, you know, with the quarterbacks, with the coaches, all of that. And so for the Cardinals to come out and get a win where their offense played below expectations, they were still good, but I would say below expectations, was way more impressive than anything else. And that's what I take from it, because it means that they won in different ways. I mean, we can talk about, you know, the Ezekiel Turner kind of momentum changing punt block. We can talk about the defense getting stops, you know, on fourth and goal and those situations that didn't happen last year. If the offense wasn't perfect, the team didn't have a chance to win. And this year, I mean, obviously it's just game one, but there's already a change. And I think that's what was so important.
For me, like I look number one, just what ailed the Cardinals last year. There are three metrics that I kind of look at from last year that they were atrocious at. Well, one, they were bad on third down on offense for much of the year. They were horrifically bad on defense on third down. And then they had really big problems in the red zone at the start of this, about the first half of the season offensively. And you look at the just week one, they were 50% on third down offensively. They were 100% in the red zone. And then, holy cow, even though like San Francisco's offense put up yards, it wasn't a dominating performance by the Cardinals defense, but they held them to 2 of 11 on third down, which means they got off the field and 0 for 2 on fourth down. And if there's anything that you can hang your hat on, it's kind of those metrics. And coaches look at those, especially Vance Joseph. You know, you can win first and second down, and that's part of the problem before they last year. Weren't even wearing that, but they would give up third down after third down after third down. They never got off the field. And so to see them do that to the 49ers, and I will say, obviously, the 49ers were hampered quite a bit, especially in the second half when they didn't have they seem, you know, when they're relying on a trio of receivers named Kendrick Bourne and Trent Taylor and Dante Pettis, they've not done anything. You know, they're nice threes and fours to have, but when they don't have any legitimate receivers, and then George Kittle is banged up for the second half of the game, and so nonetheless, that's the type of defensive performance that you'd expect the Cardinals to have, or any decent team to have, against a team that is missing weapons, and they were able to do it.
Yeah, and that's something, again, we've talked about. They've struggled to beat teams when they are wounded. I'm not going to say that they should beat the 49ers. 49ers are still a phenomenal team, but they struggled to beat teams when they have the opportunity to, and we saw that last year in a couple instances. And one of the things that you hit on that's so important is the defense last year in three games gave up game-winning drives, meaning that the offense gave the ball back to the defense with a lead and said, you guys have to finish this, and they failed.
Every single time.
Yeah, and you know, that's what I kind of talked about after the game, is there's a lot of stuff that needs to be cleaned up still. A lot. And that's, I mean, again, it's game one. It's the first game for them at all against another team. Really the first live action all season. And so all of that is fine. But the fact that what you and I, and I would assume most fans, go looked at as the biggest issue coming in was, could they finish? And they finished in game one. I mean, think about that. That was the scenario. That was the worst case scenario, wasn't it? The offense goes down, scores, gives the ball back with 5 minutes to go. I mean, that's too much time. I mean, that's all you're thinking. And then they convert on that third down, and you go, here we go again. I mean, it just felt like deja vu. Right. And so for you know, Patrick to recover and make a play on the ball, that was a play he quit on last year. I mean, it just flat out is. We saw that same play to Dante Pettis, and he literally quit on it. To see, you know, Byron Murphy, who had not played well for, you know, two or three quarters in the game, come back and make two plays in a row to basically, I mean, to end the game was incredible. And so those are the things, I mean, those are the little things that take you from a 5-win team. And I mean, it's definitely overreaction Monday or Tuesday. So I want people to understand that Jess and I are not saying, oh, this is a, you know, a playoff team. This is an NFC, you know, contender now. No, that's not what we're saying. But what we are saying is now they are legitimately, you can talk about being or having a chance to compete in the NFC West, because you've already got one win under your belt. You've already got a win matching your total from last season, beating your total from, or I guess they beat the 49ers twice, but matching your total from last season. You're in undoubtedly the best division in the NFL, and you're 1-0 in the division. Obviously
they are in first place,
right?
They're in first place because they're 1-0 and they have a division win. So that puts them first place Cardinals.
And so that's, I mean, all of that matters, especially when you're a young team that has not won, when you're being led by a coach that for all intents and purposes has not won in his career. So to see that all kind of happen, I think it was the right first step, because the things that we would be lamenting, and we'll talk about them, but the things we would be lamenting in a loss would be much more difficult to deal with, I think, at this point.
A couple other things that to me stood out that I was thrilled about, and I talked about this last year over the course of the season, is it felt, especially at the beginning of Kyler Murray's career, that whether it was him or Cliff, it felt like he was purposely handcuffing himself or being handcuffed in the running game. Like, they were actively trying to not run. I wanted to see him make – I wanted to see him use his legs more often, and it was exactly – what he did against the 49ers was so stunningly good in the running game because it's what makes him so dangerous. Now, he wasn't dynamic in the passing game. And I will say this, that the 49ers secondary is highly underrated. They've got Richard Sherman, but their defensive backfield – for what they do, especially when they build up front, they do have a they have defensive backs that fit their system quite well, and they were, as we saw last year, they were so good against the pass overall. And so the fact that he didn't put up eye-popping passing numbers, but I was so happy to see him when he didn't see his reads wide away, hey, or a running lane opened up, he didn't hesitate, he went, and he used his speed, he used his legs, and that's the kind of thing I think I think he has the potential. I'm not saying Lamar Jackson type numbers, but he should be the type of runner that he is. He should have more than the 544 rushing yards that he had last year. He could threaten, like, If everything offensive, like, okay, we're going overreaction Tuesday here, but 4,000 yards passing and 1,000 yards rushing, I could see a world where that's possible with Kyler Murray.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, when you're averaging 7 yards a carry, and that includes kneel downs. I mean, when you're averaging 7 yards a carry, that's really important to your team, because basically what it means is if you're running the ball, you're getting yourself in first downs or, you know, third in manageable situations likely. And so that is a key thing. And that's what Lamar does so well, you know, better than anybody else, maybe in NFL history at the quarterback position, I would venture to guess, is that he picks his spots. What Kyler Murray is developing, and again, it's super early, so, you know, I don't want to overstate this, but the thing that Kyler does better than maybe anyone is he understands how to protect himself. He understands how to get down and make sure that he's not going to take a hit. And it's, you know, it's fun to watch. I know it's frustrating sometimes for fans and definitely for the opponent, but he just does such a good job of pressing and then taking that slide. And he drew 2 15-yard penalties because he varies how he slides, when he slides. It's, you know, it is really – it's really impressive to see him, you know, the nuance of that part of his game and how it's growing already. So that was, you know, that was one thing. You talked a little bit about the passing game. It was definitely sloppy. I mean, I think you and I have talked about this quite a bit, and we've talked about the need at wide receiver. Obviously, the addition of DeAndre Hopkins was really the difference in the game itself, because you've got what – I don't want to say this is what you can expect from Larry Fitzgerald now, because I think that sells him short of what he does. But you got probably close to what you're going to get out of Larry in most games, where you're talking, you know, only 34 yards. He might get a couple more yards, but he's really at this point kind of a fullback, you know, H-back tight end position. He's not a guy that's going to stretch the field, especially like Jess said, against a really solid secondary. That the thing that the 49ers do better than anybody, any other team, is tackle. They tackle so well. And so, you know, I thought that made a huge difference, you know, obviously having DeAndre forcing him the ball, and then him, you know, it goes to show kind of what we talked about with that alpha receiver and why it was so important for this team to get one, because, I mean, he was an alpha on Sunday. He was the guy that created opportunities for the offense, and that was, you know, a huge, huge break for this team and, you know, the reason that they were able to win the game.
Yeah, I don't think you can be anything other than giddy when you see just how incredibly productive Hopkins was, because, well, one, it took away any of the possibility, the chemistry between Murray and Hopkins. I never really worried about that, and after that performance, you have to go, yeah, no, that's not going to be a problem at all, because big-time players find big-time players. Hopkins is, you know, he is almost giddy about being in this offense, and I think he was so excited about this being on the Cardinals and in this system because he would have so many opportunities. And you look at it from an outside and you say, there's a lot of, yeah, he hardly had to do, let's be honest, the route tree that he ran, he hardly had to do anything. It was a lot of easy passes that he caught. And so his job is a lot easier, but the way he dominated, and he's not going to do that every game. And what thrills me about this, because Cliff's really good about this, about game planning, is that sort of just eye-popping performance, career high in his first game with the Cardinals, means that guess what other teams are going to... They already were game planning for Hopkins, but now they're going to try and do things to minimize him. That's only going to make opportunities for other players like Fitz, like Dan Arnold, like Christian Kirk, and his one catch for 0 yards. That was a little concerning, but you know, I there were just too many good things about it. And it was far from a perfect game. I do have concerns, but the positives were so overwhelmingly positive, especially with the fact that the defense. And here's the stat: the Cardinals broke up 4 passes the entire game. Now, part of that is because they had threw a lot of passes to the running backs, and so they weren't to play to make plays. But they broke up 3 of those passes in the final drive, in the final two plays. You already know I am uber positive when it comes to things. I am just so stoked about what this team it can be, and how they did against, which was their, honestly, it's the tone setter game of the season, because, you know, they have a kind of, we're going to talk about expectations, but early in the season, you wanted to see, hopefully they didn't get their pants beat off, or they were completely out physical, but then, because then you worry about the games coming up on the schedule, and with that win, you're like, this team could beat anyone.
Well, and I think you definitely got worried at the beginning of the game.
yes.
I mean, you talk about they were unable to sustain a drive. They punt. Isaiah Simmons has 3 plays, Isaiah Simmons looks like he has never played against any NFL competition in his life. And you're down 7-0. And then you can't sustain a drive again, and it's like, oh no, like you felt like it was about to get blown open, and down 14-0, that was going to be an issue, and then all of a sudden you just started, you know, creeping back in, and that's what this team needs to do, is they've got the talent, like you said, to hang with people. They've got to find a way to win, and I think that's the biggest thing you take away from this game, is that you start to develop a winning culture and a winning identity. And I know those are kind of cliche things, but it's something that this team has never had. I mean, except for 2 years in Ken Wisenhunt era and 3 years in Bruce Arians era. I mean, you literally, that's it. I mean, you've got what, a one over 500 season outside of those 5 in Arizona history. And so this isn't a franchise that's won. It's not a franchise that has sustained success. And so sometimes that is just, it's as simple as you go, that's what they need. They need to find a way to win despite the mistakes early, despite the concerning play from a guy like Christian Kirk, maybe, you know, not running the ball as well as we had hoped, but again, facing a really, really good front seven of the 49ers. But I think you also have to look at the positives of after the Mostert touchdown until the Tevin Coleman touchdown, man, those linebackers are a lot more athletic this year.
Yes.
Devondre Campbell makes a huge difference. I guess you and I can talk about this now. You know, in training camp, we had discussed the fact that Devondre Campbell and Jordan Hicks were never going to come off the field. They love those two guys. They love a hopefully healthy Jalen Thompson and Buda Baker. Those are four guys that will never leave the field. Meanwhile, you've got, I mean, and not because of anything other than, you know, again, first game stuff, but you've got Chandler Jones, only played 55 of 62, you know, defensive snaps. You know, you've got Byron Murphy not playing all 62 snaps. Dre Kirkpatrick played, what, 30% of the snaps?
Yeah, he only played 20, but that was simply a product of the fact that San Francisco never goes with three wide.
Right, and so all of that, I mean, this team wants to keep five guys on the field. Six if you throw in Jones, because, I mean, he's going to be on most of the time in pass rush situations. But they've always given him a blow during games. But for the most part, they would like to keep five guys on the field at all time. And that's Buda and Jalen, Hicks and Campbell. And then ideally, they would love to keep Simmons on the field. But right now, it's just not. And I mean, let's be honest. That was the worst case scenario matchup for Isaiah Simmons in his first game. Right. You've got the looming aspect of playing against the best tight end in the NFL. You've got the best offensive mind when it comes to utilizing running backs and fullbacks out of the backfield. I mean, there's zero question that Kyle Shanahan is better at getting his running backs and fullbacks involved in the passing game than anybody else in the NFL. And he shows it every game. I mean, Mostert, Tevin Coleman, Kyle Juszczyk all had more receiving yards than any Arizona Cardinal not named DeAndre Hopkins, I believe.
Correct.
And so you're just talking about a terrible, terrible matchup for a rookie that's, you know, let's be honest. You and I were slightly worried that they were just going to have him kind of rotate in with Devondre Campbell and Jordan Hicks. And maybe that's what they end up doing because he can't handle the load. But from what we saw, the idea was that he was just not going to come off the field. He was going to play off ball. He was going to play edge. He was going to play, you know, he was going to flex out to cover tight ends or fullbacks or running backs in the slot if need be. Like, that's what they think they have in Isaiah Simmons, and they were going to utilize him that way. It didn't come to fruition in the first game, and that's okay. And that's the thing is, when you win, all of that stuff is okay because you won. And you won against the team that's the, you know, the favorite to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talking. We're going to move on to the concerns. We already talked a little bit about it, but let's talk about more specifics. Concerns we have from the win. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about the concerns we had in the win. And there were definitely things to be concerned about. I mean, I think number one, you have to look at Zane Gonzalez, a guy who was so good last year. And now, it turns out the kickers are terrible all over the place. I think the preseason lack of a preseason might have affected kickers more than anything else, or not having fans in the stadium for whatnot. He misses two field goals. And, I mean, he does hit that 56-yarder at the end of the half, which is fantastic, but with that first game, and this is overreaction Tuesday or overreaction Monday, if everyone talks about that, it's the overreaction of game one. It feels like oh, please don't let him turn in chat and Chandler Catanzaro, because Catanzaro's first year, he was money. And in 2016, he became a head case. His consistency was off and you just couldn't count on him. And Zane was so good last year. I don't want that happen to him this year. And then they go out and bring in an old kicker to work out, and you're wondering, wait, are they worried?
Yeah, and you know, the whole thing was with Zane, he was bad in Cleveland, and we always gave him the benefit of the doubt of the injury. Oh, he hit an injury, that's why he struggles.
Surface issues and change snappers and holders on him. So those are things that matter, but ultimately.
Right. Yeah. And so you write off the struggles as that. And then he comes back and has, you know, a Pro Bowl caliber season. And you look at it and you go, okay, maybe this is the guy for the future. Cause I mean, you're talking about a young kicker and you look at the teams that are consistently good, and you've got who? Steven Goskowski, obviously Adam Vinatieri. You've got guys that stick around forever. And so, you know, you don't want to put that type of pressure on him, but that always creeps into your mind. Okay, they've got the kicker position handled for the next, you know, 5 years, 6 years. It's perfect. And then he comes out and he struggles in game one, and you go, okay, maybe they don't have the kicker position figured out for the next five. I mean, and I think you give them the benefit of the doubt. I really do. I think that you look at it and you say, okay, this is what, you know, this is what he did in the game. He, you know, he had his struggles, but overall he was, you know, he's earned the right to show it again. And so I think from that perspective, you have to be patient and give him the benefit of the doubt and kind of see where it goes from there.
For me, another thing that was a little bit of a concern was, well, obviously, I think the other thing that's a concern for me is you look at the injury situation. Luckily, the Cardinals, I believe, have really good depth at center. So Mason Cole going out, you didn't notice a downgrade to Lamont Gilliard, and he's a guy that we felt could be a really nice pick when he selected out of the fifth round. He is super competitive, he's super physical, and he's got a nasty streak to him. But I didn't notice any mistakes from him during the game. But then Jalen Thompson's injury, I'm worried, especially since they're going to count on him, how that affects things because of his. And here's the thing. This is where things change. The one thing that they love about Jalen Thompson is his tackling ability. If Jalen Thompson doesn't get hurt, I don't think Raheem Mostert goes for that 76-yard play. I think Jalen turns that into a 15-yard gain. And without him, it changes the dynamic. Now, we'll have to see about Deontay Thompson. He had a good camp. They're high on him. He's super physical as well. But what Jalen was for the Cardinals was very steady and consistent. I'm a little bit worried about that moving forward because, you know, now you're testing the depth. You didn't feel that they had a lot of depth at safety. You have some players back there who can play, but I don't think it's going to be the level of consistency.
No, and I would agree with that. And, you know, I'm interested in what they have in Deontay Thompson. We wanted to, you know, discuss that just a little bit, that he was inactive. And so this isn't they don't like or that they didn't like him type of thing. This is more for this game. they didn't have him active. So Chris Banjo was your flex safety that came in and would play, you know, either of the positions, whether it was free or strong, to, you know, God forbid if one of the guys went out. And so I think, you know, we need to understand this wasn't a reflection on Deontay, the safety, as much as it is that Deontay doesn't play special teams. And so, and Chris Banjo's a, you know, one of the key special teamers. You know, when you look at the concerns, I think from the offensive line standpoint, I was relatively surprised how much better their pass blocking was than their run blocking. I think run blocking does have quite a bit of, or it requires quite a bit of consistency. So you have to, you know, it's something that you have to do quite a bit, and you have to know the guy next to you really, really well. But it was really just Kelvin Beachum that's, you know, new. So you felt like that they would be a little create more lanes for Kenny and Drake. Again, you have to factor in the Kyler rushing, but I think there was only, what, two or three designed runs for Kyler. Some of them were scrambles. And so that's, I think, something that you have to kind of look at and go, okay, I don't want to call it a concern, but and again, the 49ers defense is phenomenal. And that was something that, you know, Kyle Posey of Niners Nation had said to me in our group text message. You know, I just kind of asked him, you know, what's the feeling with DeForest Buckner gone? And he said, their run defense will be fine. It's they're going to suffer on the pass rush. And I think we saw that in game one. And so maybe being confident or overly confident in what you saw from the pass protection in game one might be overzealous, but then maybe being too concerned about the run defense or run blocking in game one might be too overzealous. But, you know, when you look at it, those are things that you want to see, you know, continue in terms of pass block, but you want to see cleaned up in terms of run blocking.
Two other things of concern for me. Well, one, it would be the complete lack of production from Christian Kirk. You know, they tried to give him a couple of opportunities down the field. On one, they got away with a play where he probably should have been flagged. Kyler just couldn't connect with him. But it was just the DeAndre Hopkins show. And then aside from Kirk, you look at, for me, you want to see better rhythm offensively earlier. And Cliff likes to take the blame on himself, and maybe he's the one who you should take the blame for, because as good as they were at running the ball last year, he really went out of his way to try to use the passing game early on. It was like he got into the same bad habits that he was in last year, and then things started falling into place. And then if they'd gotten down another score, I think it would have been frantic again. But he got the running game going. I wasn't too concerned about the running game. If you look at this, you know, the running back plays, I mean, you got 60 yards from Ken, you got 86, you got 26 from Chase. And so you got 86 yards. It's not great, but against a stout defensive front, and a team and plus Kenya didn't have as many reps in the preseason, and a 49ers team that knew what Drake could do, that was a factor as well. And so I don't like the fact that it seems that too often the Cardinals, especially offensively, come out jittery or flat.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is you look at it, and you would expect in the second year that they would be a little more, and that, like I said, that was my concern, was more that it wasn't, there wasn't enough newness for it to look that, there was some sloppiness to it. I think you would agree with that. Like,
yes.
there was general sloppiness that will get cleaned up with reps, but it was a bit surprising to see. I do think watching Kansas City on Thursday night, and I watched Baltimore and Green Bay in the morning, is probably not the best thing to do, because you're talking about, you know, offenses that have MVPs. You know, Green Bay's got a soon-to-be Hall of Fame quarterback whenever he decides to hang it up. And so maybe for me, my expectations were slightly too high, due to the fact that I assumed that they would kind of pick up where they left off at the height last year, as opposed to being realistic and saying, hey, it's game one against a top five defense in the NFL. And that's a top five defense. They weren't missing anybody that mattered on defense. So they had their defense, and you came out and you were able to establish, you know, a good enough running game, a good enough passing game, move the ball enough, score 24 points, and come away with a road victory in week one. Like, so sometimes you need to step back and go, expectations for terms of crispness and flow of the offense may not have been there, but it was better than the result both of us predicted. So at the same time, you know, what do we know?
Coming at us with the Rise Up C-Rip podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about a few of the surprises that we had. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Time to talk about some of the things that were a little bit surprising, because there were some surprises. Now, I'm going to start off and say, I'm sure it was surprising for fans to see the Cardinals employ in their base defense five linebackers, so you have Devondre Campbell, Jordan Hicks, and Isaiah Simmons on the field. That was not something that I was surprised about. It was something I couldn't report on. It's something I'd seen happen. But so while that formation wasn't surprising, you know what actually surprised me after is the effectiveness of Hassan Reddick. And the talk how he has kind of really gotten comfortable in his new role at outside linebacker. The truth is, he's kind of Isaiah Simmons before Isaiah Simmons, and he just came too early to take advantage of it, because what Hassan was playing a lot of was a hybrid position, kind of like what we have for Simmons, which is it's kind of an inside backer, but it's not really an edge player. But it's kind of doing both things. They used Hassan last year as in their speed package, in their NASCAR package, as a third pass rusher. And Hassan did a little bit of everything. He wasn't great, but you saw this. So if only Vance Joseph had put him in a role like this before, maybe he wouldn't be a bust today. And now, conversations that we've had is that was impossible for the Cardinals to do before this year, because they had Jordan Hicks and then nobody else. When you've got Hicks and Campbell, that gives you that flexibility. But so while Hassan Reddick was surprisingly effective in his 30 snaps that he played.
Yeah, I thought Reddick's role and ability was important. I think ideally those snaps remain with Isaiah Simmons, wouldn't you? But
correct.
And so you're talking probably 48 snaps for Isaiah, because he had 18 and then Hassan played 30. But, you know, I thought the usage of the defensive tackles was interesting. Not, I mean, you and I had talked and spoken about the 2-2-5 front. But more about, I didn't expect to see so much Corey and so little Jordan. Now, and this is nothing that we have insight on. I don't want it to anybody think I'm making a declaration or talking out of school. What I'm saying is, I do wonder if the fact that Corey is a, you know, 34-year-old veteran with two torn Achilles in his history, he knows the effort and off-season workout that is needed to be ready, where Jordan has been described as a bit immature in his career. He just got his first big payday and is coming to a new team in a new city and was under quarantine. If he maybe wasn't physically in the best shape yet.
And that's possible. I think that's actually more of a product of the offense that the 49ers run. They play a lot more rundown things, and I think Corey Peters is still their best run defender, and so he played a lot. And comparatively, the 44 snaps he played is right about where you want Corey Peters playing. But because they weren't in as many pass rushing situations, I think that's how they're going to employ Phillips more. That's what they paid him to do, as opposed to. That was kind of the role that he had when he was in Miami and for much of the time in Buffalo. And I think it was kind of the same case as Drake Kirkpatrick. He was like, he only played 20 snaps. Well, that's because the 49ers stayed and the 49ers do often stay in base, which is two running backs, one tight end, most of the game.
Yeah, and I mean, I thought the emergence of Angelo Blackson was a nice surprise. We didn't talk about him in the positive section. Probably should have mentioned him. You know, that's an old school Kime Time signing, wouldn't you say? Like,
right.
He's a guy that comes in, has 37 snaps, or sorry, 23 snaps, only plays 37% of the snaps, you know, has a tackle for loss and a sack in a game. Like that's a nice way to get going on, you know, out of the gate there.
Right, and a guy who he has more sacks now than he did all last season. And he started 15 games for the Texans last year, but when you picked him up, you thought, yeah, he's back of the roster depth, and then he comes in and plays a lot, has a sack, and I did not expect that at all. I didn't expect him to play as much as he did, and it just shows just that in terms of the scouting. It really reminds me, I'll be honest, the impact Jonathan Bullard had last year when he was largely somewhat disappointing in his stint with the Chicago Bears after being drafted in the third round. And he came in and performed better than was basically more productive in nine games than he'd have been in any season previous. And I think we're seeing kind of the same thing with Blackson. I think he will be a really nice addition.
Well, and that's I've talked about this quite a bit on this podcast and on my podcast with Justin, and you know, it's something I very much believe in, and that's there are players that just have so many bullets in their gun, so to speak. And the Cardinals seem to have a lot of those guys on the defensive line, and that's not a negative thing. That's a positive thing. They have a bunch of guys that are probably limited in terms of how much you want to rep them out. You know, you talked about Corey Peters. He played 44 snaps. That's probably the high end of where he'll be, and they only played 62 snaps in the game. So that was only 70% of the snaps. They probably want him at 44, and that to be around, you know, 60 to 65%. But, you know, Jordan Phillips, like you said, he's more the pass rusher. Zach Allen had a sack, 31 snaps, pass rusher. Blackson, Rashard Lawrence, Leckie Fotu, those are the guys that are going to come in and give Peters his blows when he needs a little break. And I think that rotation, having Phillips and Allen, and then Peters and those other guys, is the way that they want to deploy. And like you said, in this game, it was probably going to be more Angelo Blackson than Jordan Phillips in certain situations, because Blackson, that's his strength. He's kind of a older Rashard Lawrence, if you will, in terms of what he does best.
The final surprise for me was we came actually before the game, and that was when the actives came out, and it was Chris Streveler who was active over Brett Hundley. And I've been really, I mean, I don't know what to think about his role on the team. However, things got a little more clear when they brought him in for a QB sneak, picked up the first down. And I said it on Twitter. I'm like, why in the world do you need a guy like Streveler when you have Kyler Murray on your team? You don't need to bring Streveler in the game because that means not utilizing Kyler. Kyler is one of the best players on the team, period. But I think he's an interesting addition. Hundley still shows up as number two on the depth chart, but I think what we're seeing is since Streveler has a little bit of special teams upside, he played one snap. I don't know what that, I have to go back and look and see what that was. He's going to be your game day active quarterback. It's kind of like the Chris Banjo thing. And the same thing with DJ Foster over Eno Benjamin is that the guy that can play special teams and come in and have a specific role at his natural position is the guy that they're going to go with on game days. And it's kind of interesting to see. And although, once again, we see Cliff saying he's not a slash guy, Chris Streveler is not Taysom Hill. And I think we need to get, I think we need to make that clear. Chris Streveler is not Taysom Hill, though I do think he will probably be the QB sneak guy, because if there's one thing Kyler doesn't like, it's contact. He does not want to get hit. And so a true QB sneak is not going to be his cup of tea. I think Streveler, who's, I think, 6'4", 215, he's going to be that guy who's much more physical. He's a physical runner. He will be the guy that bring in for that, maybe for a trick play or two with his arm. But I think if he continues to do what he's done in camp, he's their backup quarterback moving forward.
Yeah, and you know, you and I were talking off the air, and I think your point is salient and accurate. And again, this is just Jess and I talking, so we're not reporting anything. I don't want anybody to take this as more than just he and I expressing our opinions, and that is that in the unfortunate event that maybe Kyler Murray misses a game. So going into a week, he is ruled out. I think Brett Hundley would be the starter, and you were the one that said that, and I completely agree. I think from that standpoint, it's similar to the Deontay Thompson, Chris Banjo thing. Deontay Thompson would play if you need a safety over Chris Banjo, but on game days, you're not planning on two safeties getting hurt. So you keep your more versatile guys available. In this case, that's Chris Streveler. He's a guy that can come in. He's faster than Brett. He's bigger than Kyler. He's obviously going to be a physical kind of runner up the middle on those situations. And he's a guy that you can have – Chris and Kyler can be on the field together. They were on the field for that play together. Kyler was flexed out. And so it's just – that's what happens. You have a guy in Brett that is a pure quarterback. And I know Cliff is saying – Streveler's a quarterback. That's what he is. But let's be honest, they're not utilizing him in that way at this point. So, you know, God forbid it comes to fruition. I think you and I believe that Brett would be the starter and Chris would maintain his role as kind of the backup guy, the guy that can come in for a play or two for specific packaging and stuff of that nature.
Coming next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to spend a little bit of time in talking about whether or not we need to change our expectations for the team. That's coming next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Cardinals expectations. Now they're 1-0. What now should we think? I mean, we kind of did this for the Cardinals about midseason. You know, they started out 0-3-1, but then they rattled off 3 wins in a row. Then they started losing again, and then ultimately they won kind of the amount of win the games with 5 wins that we hoped they would be at. It wasn't quite as many, but the 5 was kind of the mark we were hoping for. But now, this was a game that we felt was probably a loss. It was one that we both penciled in as a loss when we did predictions. So now they're ahead of their pace. But and the way that they did it, the fact that they picked out a win, and they did so even with mistakes. So let's put it quite frankly. They had a 4-point win in a game where they made some glaring mistakes. They had 2 missed field goals, and they had a blown coverage that led to another touchdown late in the game. And then you had the really bad look for Isaiah Simmons. And, you know, it viably should have been a much less close game. So moving ahead now, the Cardinals have, let's face it, the next 4 games on the schedule look quite winnable. You've got, now granted, the Washington football, we're going to talk about that in the next segment, but the Washington's team is very physical up front, but they were playing an Eagles team that was decimated on the offensive line by injury. And so, but Washington didn't look good coming into the season. We felt that that's a game the Cardinals should win. The Panthers look like a team that's not that was.
They look similar to last year's Cardinals, that they've got some talent, but they've got some issues that need to be ironed out first.
And the Lions, you never, like with Matthew Stafford back, you never look at as a good team. So we could, and then you got the Jets, and the Jets are the Jets. We could, I mean, it does not seem too crazy that with a win like this, that the Cardinals should be or could be 5-0 heading into their Monday night game against Dallas. And that's crazy, but and it's almost that win almost raises that level of expectation. So they win this week, and you're like, okay, so they've got a good win against a good team. They've beaten a team they should beat. You know, 4 or 5 wins in the first 5 games kind of feels like not expecting too much right now.
Yeah, and that's kind of what you're hoping for, is that you just continue to see growth and that this team can play from a position of strength. And it's not something that we've seen and or experienced as Arizona Cardinals fans in the last 3 years. You know, and we have covered it on our sites, but they come into this matchup with the Washington football team as a favorite, and not just a heavy favorite.
The same, they're given 6.5, they're giving away 6.5 points is what, which is the line for ultimately ended up being against the 49ers, but in the 49ers' favor.
And so that's the thing. The next 5 games are going to define and kind of give us an idea of, is this team really a contender, or are they a team that caught the 49ers in a bad situation on a, you know, without a lot of their, you know, quote unquote top talent? You know, was that a fluke win? Are they, and I'm not saying they are, but are they similar to Jacksonville in that they, you know, they pulled off an upset nobody expected? And so it starts this week. I mean, we'll get into the nitty gritty, but it's when you're talking about a team that has not won consistently in Washington, and they have a new head coach, and they have, you know, they've got a lot of talent on that defense. You're looking at it as a game that the Arizona Cardinals are favored in and they should win. You're looking at, you know, the follow-up game as a game that the Arizona Cardinals should win. And the reality is, we haven't had those expectations for a couple of seasons now. And a lot of it just came down to this team lacked talent. Now that's not an excuse. It's not something that, you know, that you can put out there as, oh, they just don't have enough talent to compete. Well, no, they showed that they have talent and then some to compete. Now it's just time to compete. And so that's what the question can be, you know, becomes is, will this team compete?
Absolutely. You're completely on point with that. I look back, you know, that this sort of win is promising, but they've got to build on it and they've got to look good doing it too, because, you know, I've been covering the team long enough that I remember 2012 and they win 4 in a row and they talk about being special and then all hell breaks loose and they lose 11 out of their last 12 games. And that there were other circumstances. Kevin Cobb got hurt. John Skelton was terrible. They didn't have Levi Brown that year. It was just a mess. It was a mess. And so, but this year, I mean, I think now we should raise expectations. Okay, they win on the road in the division. Now you're saying, okay, now I believe in you. Now do it again, and beat a physical Washington team, and then you're like, okay, do it again. But I think now we sort of enter this next phase after the, you know, this two-game homestand and the overall schedule. We just now we expect them to be, we don't think, well, maybe we'll win. Like, it's like, yeah, these are games they should win, and hopefully they can keep up with those expectations. Is that's, you know, every year is like, here's the thing about Arizona sports is that every team that has expectations placed on them falters. That's what we've seen consistently over time is, as Arizona sports fans, is like anytime an ounce of expectation is placed on the team, they struggle. And that's what we want to turn around starting this week.
Yeah, and that's kind of the key to this season, isn't it? We talked about it when we gave our previews and when we gave our predictions that, you know, we weren't expecting playoffs. We were expecting to be competing in week, you know, 15 and potentially 16 and 17 for a playoff berth. But we weren't expecting the playoffs. I mean, I think everybody would agree with that. If you start off, let's just say 5-0, let's just shoot the moon and say they're 5-0 going into Monday Night Football in Dallas. If you start off 5-0, your expectations have completely morphed into something way more than, oh, let's fight for a playoff. Now all of a sudden you're saying, let's win a division. Let's be one of the top teams in the NFC, especially in the powerhouse NFC West. And that's how, with each week, that's how expectations will morph and change and shift. And so I think that's what really you look at it. So, you know, you won a game that you weren't expected to win. That happens. I mean, you look at Jacksonville, you look at the football team they're going to play this week in Washington. Neither of those teams were expected or thought they would win. Now, all of a sudden, they did. You want to separate yourself this week and say, our win wasn't a fluke. My team isn't a fluke. My team is really, really good, and we're going to start to prove it by beating teams we are expected to beat. I think that's now the next step, and I think realistically the expectation, because let's be honest, if San Francisco came out and just worked this team like they seemed like they were in the first quarter, this is a completely different conversation. Right. We're talking about a team. We want to see if they can rebound. You know, Washington's coming off a huge division win. You know, was that a fluke, or are they for real? And is Arizona, you know, destined to start 0-2 again? You know, those are the conversations we're having. Instead, we're saying, show that you belong. Show that you belong in the conversation. We're not going to, you know, we're not putting them up there, even with San Francisco at this time, but, you know, we're not putting them up there with San Francisco, New Orleans, you know, Green Bay, the teams that were considered the elite of the NFC last year. We're not saying that those are that's where the Cardinals are yet. But I think it's fair to say that we want to expect them to start playing that way, and you know, that's now the expectation. is that, okay, is this a team that can compete for a playoff berth and division title in this season, or are they, you know, was that a fluke win?
Coming up next on the Rise FC Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to wrap it up. We're going to talk about the Washington football team and the matchup that they have coming up this weekend. That's coming up next on Rise FC Red. We're back on the Rise FC Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk Washington, a team that managed to win 27-7. They fell behind 17-0 to the Philadelphia Eagles and then rattled off 27 straight points and managed to do it on 241 total yards of offense. They did sack Carson Wentz 8 times, and that's something that's going to be a little concerning, but they do have an incredibly talented front four. I was talking to my son, Diego, he's a big football fan too, and we're kind of comparing. It's like, I would say that the front seven of the 49ers is superior to the front seven of Washington, but there might not be a better front four than Washington's because of they've got Chase Young, and they got Montez Sweat starting at the edge, and then they get Ryan Kerrigan off the bench. Those are three really good pass rushers. You've got Daron Payne in the middle, but the linebackers, the linebackers to me aren't nearly, because the 49ers have very, very good linebackers, and so the question for me is, how much was that 8 sack performance a result of just Washington's talent, and how much was the result of Philadelphia being in shambles on the offensive line? No Lane Johnson, no Brandon, whatever his name is, their right guard, the loss for a season. No Andre Dillard. They've got Jason Peters moved back out to left tackle. That looked like just a perfect disaster.
Yeah, I think the Washington front four, I think you kind of spelled it out perfectly. They're really talented. So obviously Chase Young and Montez Sweat at defensive end, I mean, that's a nightmare combination. I think, and you mentioned Daron Payne, who's a really nice kind of interior guy. I think similar to Jordan Phillips. He's not quite as big as Jordan, but 220. He's not like he's a small man by any means. But the guy that you kind of left out, and a guy that has really produced well in his career and has become kind of a really nice player in this league, is Matt Ioannidis. And
yes,
he's another kind of interior guy, 6'3", 210. He had 1.5 sacks. The last so after his rookie year in 2016, the last 4 seasons, so including this one, he had 4.5 in his second year, 7.5, and then he had 8.5 sacks. And he's already got 1.5 this year. Like, from an interior guy that's, you know, 6'3 and 3'10, those are massive numbers. The other thing that they did, and that Carson Wentz is prone to do, and let's be fair, so is Kyler in his young career, is turn the ball over. They forced 3 turnovers in the game. They didn't turn the ball over once. So when you look at those things, their offense is, I think, paltry is a fair way to put it. They don't strike fear into you. Terry McLaurin is a phenomenal wide receiver. It's nice to say that he'd be a number 2 on the Cardinals because they have DeAndre Hopkins. But, I mean, he'd be their number 2 receiver with a bullet on the Cardinals right now. He's a fantastic young player. Their running game is kind of hit and miss. Peyton Barber was awful, but he scored 2 touchdowns. So you fantasy people probably loved his performance, but 17 carries, only 29 yards, less than 2 yards a carry, but he had 2 touchdowns. Antonio Gibson's a really interesting guy, and this is the guy that I worry about in the game more than anybody else. Cause Terry McLaurin's going to get his, the rest of their wide receivers are just, you know, I mean, Steven Sims, I honestly don't know who that is, if I'm being completely honest with you. He had nice numbers, 3 catches, 50 yards. former Arizona Cardinal great Logan Thomas as their tight end. Dontrell Inman, you know, he's a big, tall guy. That's what I would say about him. But Antonio Gibson, the rookie, you and I highlighted him in our draft previews. We loved Antonio Gibson's fit in this offense. We loved his hybrid-like ability to be a David Johnson-type playmaker. And while they're not, they are not, you know, Scott Turner is not Kyle Shanahan, Antonio Gibson is extremely talented as a runner and pass catcher. So he is going to be, to me, the biggest concern for this Sunday. A guy that can run the ball, a guy that can catch the ball in the backfield. You know, is Isaiah Simmons up to the test this week? Will it be more Hassan Reddick again? That's something to watch. You know, I'm interested to see how they cover McLaren. This isn't San Francisco with Dante Pettis and Kendrick Bourne. This is McLaren is a legitimate wide receiver one. He's a silky smooth guy. He's the type of guy that in the past has given Patrick Peterson trouble. So I'm interested to see kind of how the Cardinals deploy their cornerbacks this week and what they do. The Cardinals also have to create turnovers. That's something that this team needs to be able to do consistently is force turnovers against their opponent. They didn't do a great job of that in San Francisco. Outside of the Kyler Murray interception, they didn't really turn the ball over themselves. So it was nearly a moot point. But, you know, despite not having a lot of names along their offensive line, the Washington football team, so stupid, man. They only gave up 3 sacks. So you look at those things, you kind of put those all into context. I think the strengths of the Cardinals match up well with the strengths of the Washington football team. I think the Cardinals' ability to get rid of the ball quickly on offense can help negate the pass rush at times, like what we saw in San Francisco. I think the Cardinals are going to have a better time. I won't say easier. We'll have a better time running the ball with Kenyon Drake. And then as Jess has, you know, kind of astutely pointed out, Kyler Murray being deployed slightly more this week in the run game, like he was in San Francisco. And then on defense, you're talking about a offense that, you know, Jess pointed out, they're 30th in yards. They are 28th in first downs, 28th in passing yards, 30th in, you know, net yards per attempt passing. They are 31st in yards per attempt rushing. They are 26th in average time per drive and 27th in average play per drive. And 28th in average yards per drive. This is just not.
The numbers wise, it looked like a 2018 Cardinals game that had a good defense.
Yeah, and I didn't want to go there, but that was basically my comparison. Is like the offense was very similar to what we saw under Mike McCoy. It was, don't screw it up, Dwayne. Let the defense work. And let's be honest, we've seen a lot of Ron Rivera successful teams, especially against Arizona. That's the other thing that worries me, is they have done a good job Ron Rivera, not the Washington football team, but Ron Rivera teams have consistently played the Arizona Cardinals tough. They've consistently beat the Arizona Cardinals when the expectation was that the Cardinals would win. And that is something that does concern me slightly, is that Ron Rivera, more Bruce Arians, but he did show up Cliff Kingsbury last year in their early season matchup, is that Ron Rivera is a very, very good defensive-minded coach that can game plan for anybody, and that's my concern. That being said, week one is a lot different than week two in the NFL. Week one, you're game planning the entire offseason. Week two, you've done some work, but for the most part, you have 5 to 6 days to implement your entire game plan. So that's the slight difference, I think. For me, it just comes down to, can the Arizona Cardinals not turn the ball over? I know that sounds super simple. I know it does. But the reality is, if they don't turn the ball over, I just don't think the Washington offense is talented enough to hang with the Cardinals offense.
Yeah, absolutely. If they protect the football, and if they can protect, if they can be strong enough up front, the secondary isn't anything to write home about. They've got a good one in Kendall Fuller, but he missed game one. I don't know what his status is going to be for game two. I don't know how in the world they're going to try and cover DeAndre Hopkins with Jimmy Moreland and Ronald Darby. Especially, and because they're built front to the back, and they've got a good one in Kendall Fuller, but it's going to be, that could be another really ugly game. I mean, not ugly, I mean fantastic for DeAndre and the other receivers, especially if they pay a lot of attention to him. So if they can not do what the Eagles did, it'll give them the opportunity to make plays down the field.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, Cliff, one thing that he's done in his, you know, young head coaching career in the NFL is show that he can consistently game plan to the strength or the weakness of defenses. It hasn't always worked out on game day, but you've seen open plays missed against Carolina and the early Seattle game last year, where Kyler seemed to be more at fault than Cliff in terms of the flow of the game. That being said, this team can't fall behind early against Washington, because all that's going to do is just, Washington's going to try to run as few plays as possible and allow the Cardinals to run as few plays as possible. I mean, this is throwback smash mouth football in the way that they want to do things. They're not a team that's going to try to go out and score 50 points. They're a team that's going to try to win, you know, I know they scored 27, but they're a team that's going to try to win, you know, 14 to 10. That's the ideal thing for Ron Rivera. Like Jess said, this is the 2018 Arizona Cardinals. The question becomes, was the Philadelphia win the Cardinals Green Bay win that year, or was it just, you know, a sign of thing to come for looks like on paper and in game one, a really talented defense?
So yeah, I have the Cardinals. I predicted a 27-13 win. The score makes it, like, I think it'll be a tougher win than that looks, but I think the Cardinals will end up scoring what they're going to score. They're going to be in the mid to late 20s, and you know, if they protect the ball, it's just going to be hard for Washington to. It's going to be hard for Washington to produce enough, especially because Dwayne Haskins just isn't there yet. He's just not there yet.
Yeah, and that's how I feel. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from what Washington did last week. Again, their defense is going to be a force in the next 2 years. It's going to be, I mean, if they can develop an offensive identity, their defense can be game changing. I just think that in this situation, coming off that win, I don't expect a letdown. In fact, I expect this team to come out and really kind of show their mettle, and that this wasn't a 1 week fluke, and they're going to come out and they're going to put a good one on the board. I'm going to go this week 31, Washington football team 14.
Ooh, good stuff. And with that, we will end this edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Hopefully, Tom, when we come back next week, it will be against, it will be with a 2-0 Cardinals team looking ahead to taking on the Detroit Lions and avenging that tie from a year ago. But let's go ahead and wrap this up. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up C-Red podcast. We will be back next week to talk more Cardinals football. Thanks for listening. We'll be talking to you then.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up! Team Red! Rise!